I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. The left's telling reaction to our story about a troubling Pride Month display. Plus, Washington State has yet another looming budget crisis, but the Office of Financial Management refuses to explain the very obvious reason why. And Seattle Socialist Mayor finally relents on police cameras ahead of the World Cup. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Wow, what an S show this is. So we, of course, during the month of June, we talk about, you know, Pride Month things that are happening that go beyond your normal Pride Month recognitions. You know, I'm not going to look if they've got some sort of Pride Month display with rainbow flags and the history of Pride Month and all this stuff. Probably not something I'm going to waste my time on unless it's like egregious, right? And it gets to the heart of the indoctrination that's happening in our public school system. So we do a show on Friday last week, and then we get this tip about a Pride Month display at Graham Kapausen High School in the Bethel School District. That's in Pierce County, Washington. So here's the initial image that we got. It shows, you know, massive Pride Month display, a bunch of flags, a bunch of books, and then way off into the little left corner. Far left corner, how fitting is that? There's this weird jar. Let's take a closer look at that jar, shall we? Testosterone injections. It is a jar full of little jars of testosterone injections. And we get this tip, and, you know, it's amazing to me that people think, like, we're just going to throw this up and not ask any questions. Like, Nicole went back to our source and said, because the initial photo was kind of too small to see, and they were saying, hey, here's what's in this jar. And she's like, can you go back? Can you take some closer images so we can get a, because I mean, it's frankly unbelievable. Like, why in this whole Pride Month display that has some fairly normal Pride Month stuff, like some books and the history of Pride Month and all of this, have a jar of vials with testosterone injections? It's insane. And of course, it's because nowadays, you know, the kids are encouraged to be transgender. And I am sure that those were vials used by some poor young girl who was convinced that she needs to be a boy and has been injecting testosterone into her at the behest of unhinged adults, and thought that this was a perfectly fitting thing to display as part of sort of Pride Month celebrations. The issue is a few things. I mean, that's just bizarre, right? Pride Month, one thing. Having this display showing kids, like, oh, totally normal at your age when you're going through puberty to take testosterone injections. But also, testosterone in those vials shown the substance in those vials is a controlled substance under the law. And so if you go back to the close-up, Nicole, it looks like the vials are empty, except for that one that's sitting outside. I gotta say, that looks like it has a little bit of liquid left in it. And now I think it's problematic either way, whether the vials were empty or the vials were full or the vials have some remnants of the testosterone in it. I think it's problematic either way. But given the fact that this is a controlled substance, immediately after we posted this, the sheriff of Pierce County, Keith Swank, responded and he said the Pierce County Sheriff's Office will be investigating this. And indeed, this morning, so that's Friday, right? Friday afternoon, we put this out and we, you know, reached out to the school district, of course, to try to get information. Now, we can confirm, I think we have this updated image, right, Nicole? That as of this morning, the vials have been removed. So the vials were removed at some point over the weekend. We're told that happened this morning. We're also told that, indeed, police showed up to the school this morning to take a look at the display and to see if this controlled substance was still being displayed for children. And so we'll wait to see what the Pierce County Sheriff's Office has to say about that. We also did, Nicole, call the school district again this morning She had a brief conversation with the school. They were very nice, but didn't comment over the phone. But we just got this email from Bethel School District's Director of Communications, Doug Boyles. We just got it, so I'm just going to read it to you cold. He says, we were made aware of a display at Graham Kapausen High School that included empty vials of testosterone as one of its visuals. The display also contained some vials that still had a small amount of an unknown liquid. There it is. Breaking news. Right now, some of the vials still had in them a small amount of an unknown liquid. It's really, unless you're going to go in and inject some, it's the testosterone, okay? He said the inclusion of the vials was entirely unauthorized and did not receive approval from school leadership or administration. Administrators have removed the vials and identified the individuals responsible for adding them without leadership approval. We are also actively reviewing our display oversight protocols to ensure all school materials strictly align with our educational standards and community expectations. Our primary focus remains on maintaining a safe, respectful, and focused learning environment for all of our students. So there you have it. So yes, they were made aware of the vials by us. They inspected the vials. They still had some liquid left in them. I imagine that is this controlled substance. And we know that the Pierce County Sheriff's Office is investigating, and the school has said, we've identified the individuals responsible. We're trying to up our oversight. Now, this takes me to the title of today's show, The Stages of Denial. It was fascinating. This had me questioning my own sanity over the weekend, okay? Look, I've been in news a long time. I also understand that we're in the era of AI, and AI is really good. So we're not stupid. Nicole's been in news longer than I have. We're not stupid, right? If somebody sends us something, you know, we're going to want to try to do our due diligence to see that it's actually legitimate. Nicole had a lot of conversations with the individual who sent it to us. They came across as very trustworthy. Nicole had the individual send us multiple images from multiple different angles. I ran them through an AI generator. We did all the things that we needed to do, including contacting the school, to ensure that the images were authentic. And we felt very confident after all that due diligence that the images were authentic. But that did not stop the left on the internet from going through the stages of denial. So here's how the stages of denial go. We report on something insane that the left has done, and they say, that's not true. Didn't happen. And this was wild. I mean, here's just some of the posts in response to this. Funny, when I try to research that display, nothing like this comes up. I think it's cute that you use props to further your display of hate. As usual, Brandy verifies nothing. Tony Davies. People sent me a photo and now I'm whining about made up nonsense for rage bait money again. Oh, Brandy posting false photos and accusations. Brandy tweeting fake BS and not retracting it isn't effing surprising. Maggie, this did not happen. No way. Not the way she's making it sound. Things that never happened for 1,000. And again, we were very sure that it did in fact happen, because we are, although I say I'm a political commentator, not a journalist, we still go through more journalistic rigor on this show than most of the mainstream news does these days. So anyway, now it comes out, of course, that yes, as a matter of fact, and now the school verifies that yes, that happened. And we had put out more images over the weekend. And so what did the denial switch to? Again, it goes, that didn't happen. And then when it's undeniable that it did in fact happen, what do they do? Well, oh, it's not that bad. Oh, yeah, it happened, but I support it. Oh, they're just empty vials, Brandy. That's not a controlled substance. The controlled substance is gone. And so now they can't say that anymore because the school just confirmed to us that there was indeed some liquid left in the vials. So I'm just waiting for the third stage of denial, which is, oh, you're a bigot for reporting on it. That's going to be the third stage. Didn't happen. Okay, it did happen, but it's not that bad. And the vials were empty. Oh, the vials still had some liquid in them. And you're just a bigot and you hate trans people. Those are the stages of denial. Because when they initially come up and they say, oh, that's not true. And this, oh, that didn't happen. This is my favorite, Crystal Nash. This is cap, which, when do adults say cap? No cap. Apparently it means like not true or whatever it is. This is cap. My daughter goes here and nope, this is not happening. Lies, 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 lies. And it's like, okay, it is true. But when you have people who come out and say that didn't happen, the only reason they're doing that is because they know it's bad, right? They know that it's bad. So they try to claim it's not happening. And then when they can't do that anymore, they're like, oh, no, it's not bad. It's very good. And you're a bigot for pointing it out. It's absolutely outrageous. And by the way, this same school district, I was sent some additional pictures because we get, whenever we do something on a school district, we always get a bunch of parents saying, oh, did you see this? Did you see this? I mean, this isn't a one-off for this school. And this isn't a fairly rational part of the state. And for the Bethel School District's director of communications to say, hey, you know, our primary focus is a safe, respectful, focused learning environment. No, they've got left-wing propaganda all over the school. Take a look at this. No human being is illegal on stolen land. Literally just anti-ICE propaganda. Just laying around the school. Diversity is our strength. Inclusion is our power. And like, look, diversity is great. It's fine. Inclusion, yeah, I want everyone to be included. But the way that it's displayed there is a left-wing talking point. This stuff is just all over the school. So no, the vials of testosterone medication wasn't a one-off for the Bethel School District. They just allow left-wing propaganda. Do you think that there would ever be a scenario where a like pro-ICE sign would just be like laying around in a school district in Washington State on display? Of course not. But it's perfectly fine. It's indoctrination. That's all it is. These teachers are indoctrinating kids in their political worldview, in their ideology. There's literally no other explanation for it. And if you're really going to say, I'm sorry, and I do appreciate them getting back to us, I appreciate them telling the truth and not denying it. I appreciate the Pierce County Sheriff's Office investigating it. I hope something happens. But if you're going to say that our primary focus is on a focused learning environment, then you should get rid of all of this stuff. Because clearly that's just not true. And that's my fundamental issue. I would love on this show to be able to talk about literally anything else. We have a lot of important stuff on the show today. We're going to talk about the state's insane budget crisis that we're racing towards next year. There's a million issues that we can and we do discuss on the show, but think of how much more time we'd have if we could just get rid of some of this nonsense going on. Like, hey, let's just teach kids. Let's not indoctrinate kids. Let's not do all these crazy things. Let's not force boys, you know, into girls' spaces. Let's not convince kids that the body they were born in isn't right and they need to go medically change it. I mean, good grief. And also worth saying that this display was created by the Gender and Sexuality Alliance at the school, which there is gender and sexuality GSAs at a variety of school districts in Washington. So if your student's school has one of these, I think it's worth asking questions about what is being taught. You know, are they being taught about testosterone injections or whatever it is? Because the GSA isn't just for like gay and trans kids. They try to recruit allies into it. And usually there's teacher involvement in it as well. So you need to know what's happening with your kids at school and you need to speak out about it. Like, we need to say, we're not doing this anymore. We're just not doing this anymore. And I would say if your child goes to Graham Kapowsin and, you know, walked by these vials of testosterone, talk to your kid and then call the school district and make sure you express your disappointment in the school district for just what? Saying, hey, here, kids, you know, Gay Student Alliance or whatever it is, gender. I thought it used to be the Gay Student Alliance. Is that a different thing? Or did they change the name to Gender and Sexuality Alliance to like get the loop the trans thing in?
I don't know if it's a new club or change name.
But like, yeah, you need to have more oversight because I guarantee there was a teacher that had oversight of this, but the teacher loved it. Because it's not enough to have one teacher have oversight of anything anymore.
I mean, it's
because
listed.
You could get some crazy teacher.
It is listed with a teacher.
With a teacher, yeah. Right. And we're not sure. There's a teacher's name. The reason we're not putting her on blast is another teacher's name's been brought up to us, and we don't know for sure who's the current sort of overseer of all of this. But anyway, yeah, our story was true. We're not morons. We take our job to get good information out to the public very, very seriously. And so the left can have its meltdown and the three stages of denial, but it doesn't change the reality that they're trying to indoctrinate kids in radical gender ideology and convince girls in high schools that they should shoot up testosterone into their bodies. And they even display the vials filled with controlled substances to be able to drive the point home. All right, speaking of what's happening in our public school system, the headline, North Thurston teacher couple draws scrutiny amid separate police investigations involving the same student. A Timberline High teacher resigned after investigations into alleged boundary violations with a student, and the husband later placed on leave. So here's what happened in this case. It's like a love triangle, you guys, involving two teachers that are married and a student accused of having, or a student who accuses the female teacher of engaging in a sexual relationship with him. This is insane. Last year on May 9th, 2025, Lacey police received a report of an alleged sex offense from a licensed therapist involving a staff member at Timberline High School. According to police records, the therapist reported that during a therapy session, a student's mother alleged that her son was involved in a romantic relationship with his science teacher at Timberline. Lacey police notified the school district's resource officer and referred the matter to detectives for investigation. Okay, so keep in mind the timeline here. Text messages from the student's phone, dated April 28th, 2025, were submitted by the student's mother and entered as evidence. A message from the student to a friend stated, "I begged my science teacher. We made out in a field." So that's like how the mom's like, she's seen the text message from a student to his friend saying, "I begged my science teacher, we made out in a field." During a police interview with the student's sister, she alleged that her brother confided in her that he, quote, told his teacher that he loves her and that she admitted to loving him as well. So, okay, now I would say, and in this case, I feel like it's a little different because the police were looped in, but as you'll see, there was sort of a delay in doing anything meaningful. So it goes on to say, according to police investigation records from last year, a female science teacher. So when this first comes up in May of last year, the female science teacher immediately resigns. So a female science teacher at Timberline High School submitted a letter of resignation amid allegations of boundary violations with a 16-year-old. This year, in April 2026, here's where the love triangle factors in. The teacher's husband, a current teacher at North Thurston High School, was reportedly placed on paid administrative leave after a physical altercation with the same student at the couple's home, resulting in police involvement. Okay, I know this is getting confusing, but let me recap. Last year around this time, a therapist is told basically this boy is having a sexual relationship with a female teacher. Police get involved and the teacher just resigns. Okay, teacher just resigns. So that kind of stops any sort of potential disciplinary action at the school. But the police investigation allegedly is sort of ongoing during this period of time. A year later, police get called to this female teacher's home on the report of an altercation. Turns out the teacher's husband, also a teacher, beat up this kid, allegedly, which tells me that the sexual relationship was continuing for a period of time, right? It says, according to police reports, on April 7th, 2026, the student, bloodied from injuries, fled to a neighbor's house, asking them to call 911 after a physical altercation occurred in the couple's garage. During questioning with Lacey officers, the student, who had previously denied a sexual relationship with his former teacher, now alleged that he had been in a dating sexual relationship with her for the last year, frequently staying at her home, where both she and her husband resided together. So a year later, kid gets allegedly beat up by the teacher's husband, who's also a teacher. Flees the house bloodied, police get called, and then this kid decides to confirm himself to police, "Yes, I've been in a sexual relationship with this teacher." But to me, if you go back a year and you look at the evidence in this case that existed a year ago, mom has the texts that say, from him to a friend, that say, "I begged my science teacher, we made out in a field." Sister says her brother told her, "I'm in a relationship with my science teacher and I love her." And the science teacher resigns immediately. In what world is that not enough evidence? In what world is that not enough evidence to know that something has happened here? And then a year goes by, and now the kid gets beat up at the home by the husband. Again, two teachers involved now. And the husband is on paid administrative leave. It's absolutely outrageous what's happening in our schools. It's like a drama. It's like a soap opera. And there's this permissive environment around it, and this environment of sort of secrecy and lax, you know, investigations. It's absolutely wild. So I think now the investigation has ramped back up, right?
Well, it's in the prosecutor's hands. So now it's been with the kid admitting that it happened. They've now handed it back over to the prosecutor to say, now will you invest? Like, now do you want to do anything? Because now it's being admitted.
Right. It's being admitted. But at the same time, I feel like there was enough there.
Exactly.
For it to be.
Exactly.
It's just absolutely ridiculous. So anyway, homeschool your kids. And I think exhibit number 9654, why we should just be homeschooling our kids.
And if you, like you said, I mean, if you think this sounds familiar, it's so eerily close to the story we told a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
It's bizarre.
Right. Within the Olympia school
sister,
district.
Sister, mom.
Yep.
I mean, it's not the same story. This is just happening.
Yeah. And there was even some surveillance image they were able to get of the female teacher and the student together, like
going
walking
into the woods.
And it still wasn't enough to do something about it. So it continued on for at least a year until he got beat up by the teacher's husband, also a teacher. Wild stuff. All right, coming up next, the state of Washington careening towards another budget crisis. Not a surprise, but you have the Office of Financial Management that it refuses to say plainly why this continues to happen. First, our friends at Bulwark Capital are the folks that you want to go to if you need a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. Highly recommend getting one. You know, right now, there's a lot of investors that are focused on AI, crypto, tech. The real story, though, is happening somewhere else, energy. So you want to ask whether your current advisor is underestimating energy's impact on your portfolio. Energy affects inflation, transportation, manufacturing, global markets. Energy touches just about everything. So if oil supply disruptions continue, is your current advisor and is your portfolio prepared? Reach out to our friend Zach Abraham for a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. Ask for a free Know Your Risk portfolio review. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. Also, while you're there, you can follow Zach across all social media platforms, keep updated on what's happening in the markets, etc. knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, the Office of Financial Management warning of a looming budget crisis, but they are definitely playing cover for the party in power that has caused all of this. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. So the Office of Financial Management put out a letter over the weekend, and it warns basically we're heading towards potentially the worst budget crisis our state has ever seen. Doesn't that sound familiar? I feel like we're in that position every single year. And the party in power is like, what are we going to do? We have no money. We have to raise taxes. But this letter is particularly strong in its wording. So again, the director of the Office of Financial Management says in part that the state is going into what will likely be the most challenging budget any of us have yet faced in our roles. Okay, well, that doesn't sound very promising. That sounds scary. It says, to be direct, there will be significant budget shortfalls next biennium in both operating and transportation budgets. This line is interesting. Key contributing factors to our budget challenges include costs for providing essential services that are far outpacing revenue due to inflation, cuts to federal funding, population growth, ongoing economic uncertainty, and court decisions with substantial or long-term funding impacts. Okay, let's read this again so we're all on the same page. They say the Office of Financial Management, which, by the way, is supposed to be nonpartisan, okay? Key contributing factors to our budget challenges include inflation, cuts to federal funding, so Trump, population growth, ongoing economic uncertainty, and then court decisions that impact funding as well. Do you notice the one thing that's most obvious about what's happening in our state of Washington in regard to the budget is not mentioned? And what is that? It's the fact that we spend too much money. It's the fact that our budget has grown exponentially and our spending has grown exponentially. And even when you account, it's shocking to me that mentions inflation and population growth as being two of the biggest contributing factors as to why we're careening toward a fiscal cliff, when we know that budget and spending in the state of Washington have grown 3 times the rate of inflation and 9 times the rate of population growth. If this was 1-to-1, our budget was growing at inflation, our budget was growing at the rate of population growth, and we were still, you know, facing this level of fiscal uncertainty, that's a different story. But we're outpacing inflation. We're outpacing population growth by a lot. The reason we're in this situation is we spend too damn much money. And you don't even have to take my word for it. Former Democratic Governor Christine Gregoire said this just a few days ago.
I left office with a budget of $33 billion. And the budget today is $80 billion. Yet, how we find ourselves at the end of every legislative session now is in the hole and projected to be in the hole. I would suggest to you, we don't really have an income problem. We have a spending problem.
Yeah, it's not a partisan issue. The budget has more than doubled. It's outpacing inflation. It's outpacing population growth. Gee, maybe it's because we spend money on things like laser hair removal for transgender prison inmates. And you might dismiss that as a small, like, drop in the bucket. And it is. It's like $4.5 million over the last 3 years. But it shows a type of spending priority. And even if, can you go back to the letter, Nicole, from the Office of Financial Management? Even in this letter, it shows that. It reflects that. The governor is committed to equity and requests that agencies be mindful and carefully consult, consider disproportionate impacts that reductions may have. So they're focused on this idea of equity, and equity is used multiple times in here. The governor understands that very difficult decisions lay ahead, and only by working together will we get through it. I mean, this reads like a letter written by the governor to sort of let the governor off the hook, but they're looking at this through an equity lens. And you know what that means? They're not going to cut programs, the programs that most need to be cut, the programs that are feel-good programs, the programs that fund what I would consider just racist programs, like, you know, money for people to buy homes, start businesses based on nothing but skin pigmentation. Hundreds of millions of dollars are going to that every single year. Again, the millions of dollars that go to, like, help with top and bottom surgery for transgender prison inmates, just to pay for it free and clear. These sorts of things are outrageous. And it's because they got this equity lens on the budget. Look, the budget, you need to just take care of the priorities. And then we've got billions of dollars coming in for the Climate Commitment Act, and they won't spend a dime of it on transportation. That money, only like 11% of it is going to actually help reduce like carbon emissions. You got money going to things like teaching kids to ride a bike. You know what? I want kids to learn to ride a bike, but the government doesn't need to do it. The government doesn't need to fund it. Hockey lessons for immigrant children. Cool. The government doesn't need to fund it. The government doesn't need to do it. The private sector can do that. The other thing this letter mentions is the income tax on quote-unquote millionaires. And it talks about the fact that, you know, even if it survives legal challenges and the initiative in November, that it doesn't start collecting revenue for several years. And so they said, we can't really factor that revenue in. But it also kind of has this fear line. This law is also the subject of a court challenge. It may also face potential ballot measures, the outcome of which could impact the state's receipt of revenue. That, to me, is almost a line setting up the eventuality that if the income tax, you know, is shot down by the courts, or if the income tax is overturned by voters in November, what are they going to do? Well, they're going to come for who we said they're going to come to all along for more money, the middle class, the lower class. And they're going to use this sort of fear-mongering letter and, oh my gosh, the budget crisis is horrible, to just come and take more money from you, as opposed to actually taking a hard look at their spending. Governor Ferguson put out a statement about this. He said, My team and I are working closely with our agencies regarding our budget outlook. This letter from the Office of Financial Management lays out the challenge well. There's a lot of information still to come before I propose my budget in December, including two caseload forecasts and three additional revenue forecasts. That information will give us a better sense of the scale of the challenge. That said, we know the shortfall will be significant. I'm meeting with our agencies and communicating my goals: preserve core services, protect our state's most vulnerable, don't raise taxes. Bro, you've said that two legislative sessions in a row, that you don't want to balance the budget with new taxes. And what have you done? The first session, you passed the largest tax increase in state history into law. And the second session, you passed an unconstitutional, let's be honest, tax on income. And now you want us to believe, like, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me, although we were never fooled. But now you want us to believe that your priority is don't raise taxes? And then he says he wants to address the structural challenges in our budget to achieve long-term financial stability and protect our AAA bond rating. Look, and that sentence freaks me out, where he says, I want to address the structural challenges in our budget. I think that goes back to the make the rich pay their fair share, and we have an upside-down tax code and whatever it is. But he says, don't raise taxes? Okay, well then let's see the stuff that you're willing to cut, the cuts that you're willing to make, because you haven't shown us any willingness to cut the real nonsense programs in state government and the reason our budget has more than doubled since Governor Christine Gregoire left office. And then as he's doing this, this man will not stop posting about his menopause thing. Oh, he will not stop. Last week he did this like executive order on menopause, which whatever, but he's directing all these different state agencies to, you know, take action, to have more protections for women in the workplace experiencing perimenopause and menopause. You think that's free? So you're careening towards the worst budget crisis our state has ever seen. And I swear, no less than 12 times has this man made posts celebrating his menopause executive order as we're careening towards a financial cliff. And that is just exhibit A of how the priorities of the party in power work. They can't fix the big problems. They refuse to fix the big problems. So they focus on all these like, oh, nice sounding things that they hope will help them with their base as a distractionary mechanism. It's outrageous. I mean, it is going to be a nightmare, but it's a nightmare of the state's own making. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. All right, speaking of taking the opportunity to try to save this state we love, citizens in North Seattle have absolutely had enough of this gang war, drug war being fueled by the sex trade on Aurora Avenue North. It's an issue we've talked about quite a bit. I mean, there's like gangland style shootouts happening up there in residential neighborhoods. So on Saturday night, the community got together and they had a massive march demanding the city to really prioritize public safety up here. Our friend Jonathan Cho was there.
For once, it's not the nutjob leftist taking over the street. It's our turn tonight.
Hundreds of neighbors are marching, as you can see behind me. This is really an unprecedented showing by this community that's so angry at the lack of enforcement of the law, allowing the pimps, the gangbangers, the prostitutes, the drug dealers to take over these streets. They're also sounding off on Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson, who actually didn't show up. Multiple elected officials did show, but Katie Wilson still is a no-show. They're saying she's scared and she has no solutions. That's why she's bailed.
Do your job. Why are you not here? Where are you having your Starbucks latte?
You know, bullying missing 6-month-old babies inside his crib? That's crazy, man. This is turning into a third world country.
Come help the people who want it changed.
Because there's young girls out here, 12, 13, 14-year-old girls that are being exploited and bought and sold. That's why this march is so important. The sex trade is fueling the gunfire.
Are you disappointed Mayor Wilson is not here right now?
I didn't expect her to be here, dude.
Why?
She hasn't been to anything yet.
You would think that this would be a priority when there's lives that are going to be lost as a result of these pimp wars. It's dangerous, and she should make this a priority.
Not a priority, so she didn't show up.
Why do you think this isn't a priority for her?
It probably has something to do with a basic misunderstanding of what compassion and justice needs to happen. And we got to have justice. We got to have compassion mixed together. We've got to prosecute crimes. We have to clean up the street. And that's only going to happen if people show up and stop throwing around compassion and without any consequences.
Where is she? If she won't do her job, the citizens are going to do it for her. I'm so glad the citizens came together, blocked the streets, and it's going to keep happening. She needs to get on it.
I need action. No more talk. No more fluff. Do something.
Yeah, and I love the joke to the one guy. What do you expect her to be here? I expect her to be here, dude. I mean, of course she's not going to be there because she's not going to show up anywhere where she might have to answer difficult questions. And look, in fairness, is what's happening on Aurora Avenue North entirely the fault of the new socialist mayor? No. This has been happening on Aurora Avenue North for a long time and up and down 99. But there have been periods of time where, you know, there's been a real priority on trying to clamp down on the sex trade, making sure that police could go up there and do their jobs. And we know that Katie Wilson is, first of all, she was never a fan of the police. She still isn't a fan of the police. She was totally into the defund and dismantle. And when you put someone like that in office, you can't be surprised. And I'm not saying all those people in those crowds, that crowd voted for Katie Wilson. I'm sure most of them didn't. But I'm sure that a lot of them have voted for Democrats. And at the end of the day, just electing the same sort of people over and over and over is just not going to do anything. You need some substantial change. Councilman Bob Kettle was in the crowd on Saturday, and he said, you know, change starts with more cops.
It's not right or acceptable that you're having to deal with these issues. It's not right or acceptable that we continue to tread water as a city and we don't make progress on these issues that we're facing us. We need to get our officers back up. You know why? For many reasons. One is so then we can get detectives being detectives again. Because of the pandemic, loss of officers and so forth, they had to go on patrol. We need to build these positions, build these roles, so then we can better affect what's happening on our street. Get a hold of Mayor Wilson and say, yes, we need to achieve our goal by the end of this year, 1,258 officers. We need to maintain that momentum.
Yeah, and that's not possible. So, I mean, it's nice. It's a nice sentiment. But I would also say again, I mean, anybody who wants to change their mind moving forward and say, even if they were police defunders and they want to say, wow, that was like a total mistake. We need to go forward. We need to be supportive of the police. We need to hire more police officers. We need to let them do their job. You have to have your heart and your mind open for people to do that. Or else what? Nobody can ever change their mind. Nobody can ever come around. But we have to all be honest about, you know, the many steps that led us to this place. You know, the decriminalization, de facto decriminalization that the city and the state have toyed with around drug possession. I mean, of course that's going to ramp up drug dealing and gang wars and all of these things. Of course it is. And this is all intertwined, the sex trade and the drug trade and all of this stuff. I mean, you know, some of the, you could even talk about the gun laws. They haven't done anything to stop. I mean, look at these like gang wars that are happening out there with shootings like 100 rounds. The only people that your gun laws in Olympia and your regulations are impacting are the law abiding. It's just proof. It hasn't helped with reduce the number of gang shootings, the number of shots fired, none of it. And then I don't know where Bob Kettle was at on this, but, you know, a lot of people, no, very few people spoke out against firing Seattle police officers for not taking the COVID vaccine. Insane people, we predicted at the time that was going to happen. Like, they were going to leave and you weren't going to be able to replace them. So it's important to look back at how we got to this place. And yes, if you want to be a champion of the police moving forward, that's great. But don't let your friends and neighbors forget how we got to this place. So speaking of the sex trade issue up on Aurora, on Sundays with Subscribers this week, we had on Alyssa Vanderlyn. She's the executive director of the Genesis Project. And I went out with Genesis years ago, gosh, maybe 15 years ago or so. And they are focused on trying to get these women and girls off the streets. You know, when there's a sex worker that has some sort of interaction with law enforcement, and the goal is for law enforcement to call up the Genesis Project and give them an option to, like, we can take you off the streets today, not to jail, but we can take you to an organization. We can get you, you know, remove you from this situation where you're under the thumb of a pimp or being sex trafficked. And so the Genesis Project has seen it all. And Alyssa was saying, you know, look, as much as people might think it feels nice to sort of decriminalize prostitution and go after the Johns and the traffickers as opposed to the actual sex workers, She said, you know, police being able to arrest sex workers is sometimes what will save their lives. Aurora Avenue has always had an issue with crime, an issue around sex work and prostitution. But what do you think is driving, from what you're hearing from girls and what you're seeing out with police, what do you think is driving some of the violence and the sort of turf wars that we're seeing up there?
From what I understand from girls that we've talked to up there from different agencies is that they're not policing it. And so they're able to kind of get away with and do whatever they want. Seattle doesn't have enough police right now to handle day-to-day operations, but definitely not to handle something like trafficking and the vice operations and things like that. So unfortunately, with a lack of police, there's just not really anything that they can do about it right now.
Yeah, they started a program under the previous city attorney. I don't know if you've heard about it, but basically because they're short on cops, they started sending letters to the homes of people, guys whose cars were spotted acting suspicious in an area of prostitution. Are you familiar with this?
Yes, I have heard of that.
Do you think that that's effective as almost a shaming mechanism or no?
I don't think it is because, you know, from what I've heard from law enforcement, there is no shame when it comes to the people who are buying the girls. You know, having to make calls to their wives to come pick up their cars that were towed and things like that. And the wives' response are kind of just like, oh, it happened again. And so I don't think that that's the correct avenue because that really is also just focusing on the buyers, which of course there is an industry because there are so many buyers willing to pay. And so, you know, it really needs to be taken a look at from the pimps and the traffickers for sure.
Yeah. And she says, and also, yes, having it's the carrot and the stick approach. You got a woman on the streets. If you're saying to police and the socialist city attorney is messaging that we're not arresting sex workers, that is a missed opportunity for the police to intervene and to have a little leverage to send that woman to a place like the Genesis Project. Because if the option is either you're going to go with this organization tonight or you can just go back out on the streets, like back to your pimp. You know, what kind of choice is that? I mean, the woman's probably scared or she's, you know, on narcotics or something where she's not making a clear decision or she feels too scared to make a clear decision. But you handcuff her and you put her in the back of a car and you get her to safety and then you give her the option to go to the Genesis Project. So you have this organization that says, I mean, that you have to do that. We have to have an opportunity to intervene in a meaningful way. One other thing I want to note, as we're talking a lot about the World Cup, there is a huge concern that with this influx of people coming into Seattle, that the demand for sex workers this month is just going to skyrocket.
Washington is a high population for trafficking because there's a lot of men who live here. There's a lot of major sport teams here. There's a lot of businesses here. There's a lot of CEOs here and tech industries, things like that. Unfortunately, trafficking exists because there's buyers. And majority of the time, those buyers are men who have money. And so Washington, Seattle area specifically kind of fits the bill for that. So the World Cup, one, with just so many people coming here to see the World Cup, we definitely think that there's going to be a huge spike in it, especially because soccer team, men love sports. And so that's going to attract a lot of people coming from out of state. And it's even going to attract girls from out of state to, you know, engage in prostitution as well. And so that's a huge one that all the law enforcement agencies have been ramping up for.
Yeah, and if there's going to be more sex work, there's going to be more violence. There's going to be more shootings. There's going to be more drug dealing and all of those things. And what is the city doing to prepare for it? You know, the other thing I really appreciated that Alyssa said is the police department, the city should work with any damn federal agency that will help them. You know, there's all this, oh, we can't work with the feds because Trump bad and ICE and immigration and all of this stuff. There is a huge connection between immigration, illegal immigration and the drug crisis and the sex trade and all of these things. And if you're saying, oh, we're not going to work with this federal agency because Orange Man bad, you're basically leaving these women on the street to die. You're leaving people on the streets to die of drug overdoses. And I've said it, and it's not hyperbole. They would rather let people die of drug overdoses, let women be sex trafficked, than work with a federal agency under Donald Trump. That's how outrageous things have gotten. just wild. If you want to watch that full interview with Alyssa Vanderlyn of the Genesis Project, it was yesterday on Sundays with Subscribers. You can sign up to become a subscriber, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. We do in-depth interviews on interesting topics every Sunday, so you can catch those. All right, in our segment, Unbelievable, maybe a little bit of good news. Seattle's mayor finally caves on the crime camera issue around the stadiums ahead of the World Cup. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. They do a bunch of things. They can help you on an individual basis. If you've got one unit, five units, 10 units, and you're just like at a loss with what to do with all these insane policies being pushed at the local, county, state level, they can be in your corner, help you keep up to date on what's going on, the right screening forms, etc. They also are helping to lead some pretty important lawsuits when it comes to private property rights and defending them. And then they have events all year long around housing policy in the state of Washington. So rhawa.org. RHAWA.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right, it happened. So look, she changed her mind. I think that's a good thing. It's kind of crazy that she had to have her mind changed. So you know the whole drama with the crime cameras in Seattle. Seattle's got a CCTV camera system that's monitored at Seattle Police Headquarters. They've got cameras in high crime areas. And under the last mayor, they decided to expand that program and added additional cameras around the stadium district. But Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson and her socialist following, they didn't want more police crime cameras because they hate the cops and they hate holding people accountable for their own behavior. And so even though these cameras were down installed around the stadiums ahead of one of the largest sporting events the city will ever host, she's like, I'm not turning them on. And she said she wasn't going to turn them on unless there was a credible threat. Mind you, it's a terror target, right? During anything like this, any large crowd, I'm not going to turn them on unless there's a credible threat. Like, okay, but by the time you learn of a credible threat, then it will probably be too late, right? It was just unreal. So she has now changed her mind. She put out a statement saying, earlier this week, I received an updated briefing from the Seattle Police Department and the Federal Bureau of Investigation on the current global and local threat environment. The breadth and depth of intelligence gathering that informed the briefing identified general but credible threats to safety and security during the games. While not unexpected, given an event of this magnitude, this information has persuaded our law enforcement, emergency management, and FIFA security partners that we should be operating at a heightened risk level. Given this information, the stadium district cameras will be activated during the FIFA World Cup tournament. She goes on to say, the safety and security of residents, visitors, and fans is our highest priority, and I understand that many community members are deeply concerned about privacy, civil liberties, and the... Since when do socialists care about civil liberties? Isn't that hilarious? Civil liberties and the appropriate use of public safety technology. I share those values. While I have decided to have the cameras ready to help us quickly establish situational awareness near the stadiums if needed, we will continue honing our policies and protections to safeguard the data these videos capture. And look, that is the right side of this to fall on, but I go with like, okay, she's a socialist slash communist. She doesn't even mind if you call her a communist. You know, like how the communist countries are the countries that surveil their citizens the most. And it's like, that's her ideology. And now she's like, oh, we care about privacy. It's not about privacy. They just hate cops and they don't want people going to prison for crimes and they love terrorists. And it's just absolutely outrageous. You know, when she says we're going to continue honing our policies and protections, I'm fine with that. I have privacy concerns. I mean, in today's day and age, I carry an iPhone. Like, how much privacy concerns can I really have? I'm allowing the government to basically track my every movement. But yeah, I want to know how the government's using the crime data or the cameras. I want to know how long it's being stored. I want to know all that stuff. But like, we have a once in a century sporting event that's coming with a very heightened environment given what's happening in Iran. And it just makes sense. The cameras are there. Let's turn them on and let's sort of figure this out maybe after the World Cup, right? So here's the other thing. This woman cannot answer questions to save her life. It's like she wants us to believe that she really sat down and as a serious mayor and got a serious briefing and really weighed all of the potential threats to public safety and made this decision. That woman can't even answer questions from the media. So she's at this... opening celebration, grand opening for a new tiny house village in Inner Bay. And of course, the reporters don't want to talk about the freaking tiny houses. They want to talk about the camera thing. And so she, you know, sets aside time for this scrum of reporters, but as soon as the questions get too hard, out of there.
In the last week and a half, I received a briefing from law enforcement partners that told me that there have been credible threats. And so therefore, in line with the announcements that I made earlier this year, we decided to turn those cameras on for the duration of the games. After the World Cup, we will turn them off and complete the data security audit and the larger evaluation that's going on. And then we'll be able to make a more holistic decision about the future of our CCTV camera system.
What do you think you could the threat to people by actually allowing the FBI to claim that there's a threat? Don't you think that has increased the threat to people that will be protesting, to the homeless and to immigrants?
I'm sorry, it was a tight 15, but yeah. If you have further questions, I thank you all.
Sorry, I've got 11 minutes on here. We got four more. Nice. I've got 11 minutes, 30 seconds on question for a tight 15. What constitutes a credible threat?
So a credible threat is if we have, I mean, this is a pretty standard law enforcement terminology. So
minutes.
If we have information that someone intends to cause harm to people or property or a large event, right? And we believe that they have the means to carry that threat out. And this is not surprising given an event of this magnitude, right? Where we have, a complicated international situation. So
this is the same FBI that said Renee Good was a terrorist.
Questions, please direct them to me for the office, okay?
Yeah, and look, that was clearly like a left-wing sort of, I don't know, blogger or citizen. It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter to me because they said you have 15 minutes to ask questions, and she just didn't like the questions being asked. And as the mayor, if you're going to give 15 minutes for the media or bloggers or whatever it is, whether they're left-wing, right-wing, whatever it is, to ask questions, you should sit there and answer the questions. But this happens every time. This is like the fifth or sixth time where she's walked away from a scrum of reporters and, you know, community members that are asking her questions. And she's just not up to the task. It's absolutely outrageous. And she didn't have to go anywhere. Did you see her just saunter behind a tiny house afterwards? She's like, get me out of here. Help me. Help me. Just absolutely outrageous. All right, let's get to nationals. So last week on the show, and maybe this is shame on me for not recognizing that California's voting system would be very similar to ours and that results could change very dramatically. I thought it looked like a pretty good bet that Spencer Pratt would be moving ahead to the runoff in the LA mayoral race, but that is not going to be the case. I don't see anything that's going to change it from here on out because Nithya Raman saw an absolute surge on the fourth and fifth day. Was it the third, fourth, and fifth day of ballot counting? And it was outrageous. I mean, she was getting like 40%+ of every drop that was coming in late ballots. And Spencer was getting like single digits and then up to like 17%. There were some drops where he got no votes at all. I mean, it was absolutely outrageous. And so she is now up, last check, about 3,000 ballots. But given the pace, there's no way that it's not Karen Bass, again, the mayor who let the city burn down while she was drinking in Africa. And then Nithya Raman, who's sort of an unknown far left sort of socialist type city council member. Now, let me be clear. I said months ago, social media is not real life. And just because you see a candidate all over on social media and they're putting out viral videos and they're being talked about on the news, social media is not real life. And LA is very, very blue. And I said Spencer wasn't going to win, but I am surprised that Spencer is not going to make it to the runoff and that it's going to be the failed incumbent and the socialist city council member. So Spencer Pratt, not happy. So there was a net swing of more than 43,000 votes since Tuesday. He said, 43,000, huh? Where have I seen that number before? Probably nothing. And what he's referring to is the fact that there's 43,000 homeless people in LA. So he's like, oh, probably nothing. He goes on to say, remember, everyone, we're still in the lead. This was before he started actually trailing. He said, and we've got all the way till July 6th to keep counting. They're not the only ones who know where to find votes. Wink. I don't know if he's going to actually go try to find votes, but he's not in the lead anymore. So Trump posted about this on Truth Social. Not possible for Spencer Pratt to have lost the LA runoffs after the big lead he had. Third world nation, rigged elections, Now they'll be working on great guy Steve Hilton, that's in the governor's race, won't have results for possibly 2 weeks, according to officials. And yeah, I'm definitely worried about Steve Hilton as well, given the way that the ballots are trending. So in the California governor's race, Javier Becerra is still in that top position. I think they've called it that he'll be moving forward to the runoff. And then Steve Hilton, his second place lead just shrinks and shrinks and shrinks. And he's at 26%. And Tom Put Ice in Prison Steyer is at 21%. And it's like people are getting mad on the right at Chad Bianco, the sheriff, for running. Oh, you took 11% away. Okay, look, he has a right to run. And even 26 plus 11, you might advance to the general, but it's going to be very difficult for you to become governor regardless.
He was also running first.
Yeah, he was running first. Don't you?
Leave him alone.
Like, it's fine. And I mean, I guess in fairness, I said that about Semi Bird. It's like Semi Bird should. I don't think I ever said he should go. He should drop out. Did I? Maybe I did.
Probably, but.
All right.
But that's when he
maybe
got mean.
Maybe I'm a hypocritical ass as well. I don't
he
know.
He got mean at the end there.
He did get mean, didn't he? He did. So yeah, look, the Supreme Court ruling that is pending on late counting ballots, so ballots counted after Election Day, is going to be a game changer. I don't see a scenario where the Supreme Court does not rule against that, against counting ballots after Election Day. So now that'll just mean, why did I say it like that? That'll just mean that the states have to move up when ballots are sent out. I don't think you're going to have states like Washington, California say, oh, if we can't late count ballots, we'll just vote in person. No, they're not going to do that. They're just going to send ballots out earlier. And then they'll have to be postmarked or dropped off actually, like, and they'll have to set a date before the election to make sure that they're counted by then. But look, I mean, I don't know. I get it. It's very tempting to say election fraud. And her surge, I mean, we saw this with Kamala Harris, or with not Kamala Harris. Wow, people are going to call me racist now. Shama Sawant, we saw this with Shama Sawant in Seattle. She came back from a double-digit deficit when she was running for re-election to the Seattle City Council, the socialist Shama Sawant. Double-digit deficit in a matter of 5 days had taken the lead. It was insane. And we see that swing for far-left candidates, and I've never seen that swing, not once. I've never seen a swing like that for conservatives or for moderate Democrats. It just doesn't happen. So maybe their ground game at the last minute is very good. Maybe they're registering homeless people to vote on Skid Row. I don't know what it is, but I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll what you think is happening. So specifically in the LA mayoral race, I said, do you believe it's primarily the result of, here are the options, election fraud, LA just being very blue, media bias, or I'm not sure. Nicole, go ahead, say what you want to say. I'm not going to judge you.
I want to say fraud because why won't you give the data? Why won't you hand over the data?
Have they not?
Oh, yeah. No, they refuse, just like Washington State. They will not give the feds the data. So give people the data. What are you hiding?
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Like on the data on voters.
Voter rolls.
Yes, that they've been asking for.
Give them the data.
They said it's privacy. Oh, no. We
can't do that over privacy. It's not. So that's ridiculous. That's no, I don't see any other. Either they're okay with fraud. Maybe they're creating fraud. I don't know. But nothing explains this. I don't believe that these people that are excited for like a Sawant, they're excited to, you know, voice their opinion and they mail it in at the last second. Like, no, they're it doesn't make any sense how it's only them that are waiting till the last second to mail in the votes.
Yeah, my gut tells me fraud. My heart tells me fraud. My head tells me media bias. Because I'm just trying to think, like, literally, Karen.
Media. Like, encouraging, you mean?
Media bias in terms of they're so tilted toward Democrats that someone like Spencer Pratt just has no chance in a place like
LA. I don't know that anymore. Because I've been watching this KTLA coverage of it, and they seem to be okay with Pratt. Now, national coverage, you're right, but that's, like you said, real life is different than national, right? So real life when you're is different than social media. You're talking about a national social media audience, and you're talking about a national audience when you're talking about CNN, MSNBC. But if you look at some of the LA stuff, I don't, like, some of those reporters agree with Pratt. And so you can tell they're a little like, this is weird.
I don't think on the whole, you mean on the election stuff? Or no, I don't think on the whole. I mean, they were harder on him for being a reality TV star than they were on Karen for being out of the country when the city burned down. I mean, they're treating those like equal faults in a candidate. Like, oh, you know, Karen Bass was in Africa while her city burned down, but Spencer Pratt, his only experience is being a reality TV star. I feel like they're holding those up on the same pedestal when they're just not even close. I don't know. I just feel like media bias drives everything. Yeah. But I'm in the minority because that was the last answer any of you gave. 75% of you say election fraud. 11%, LA is just very blue. 11% not sure. I had to give not sure because, look, I can't prove it. I need something to be proven, right? I'm not just going to believe that it was an election. Like, look, it's a very blue area. So the fact that Spencer Pratt isn't winning, that matches up, right? But at the same time, look what was just uncovered on Skid Row. Video evidence that's being investigated by the federal government. There's already a plea deal of people paying for someone to register as a voter, paying to sign an initiative. So there's video evidence of shenanigans on Skid Row. So I'm not going to close out the possibility of fraud, but I still need to be it still needs to be proven to me that there's enough fraud to change the result, right? But let's see. James said, election fraud, but not in the traditional sense. The amount of ballot harvesting targeting the Democratic side should be illegal. That is the only thing that can explain the phenomenon we are seeing in California and on a small scale in Seattle and Washington. But look, in states like Washington, you know, where you can ballot harvest, the Republicans can do it too. So if the Democrats can do it legally, and they are, then that's the fault of the Republicans for not doing it as much as the Democrats do it. You got to utilize the tools that are given to you. Let's see. John, anyone who takes that long to count ballots is gaming the system, period. In today's day and age, this should be very, very easy. And I do have to agree, there's no reason it should take days and days and days on end. It's outrageous.
It's a machine.
I know. Like just...
It doesn't make any sense.
Over on X, Slips, a subscriber on X, says, to me, it's mail-in ballots. I don't trust the process when custody of ballots goes through such an easily mismanaged system with no oversight. Invites and leaves an opening for manipulation with no oversight, no matter the party. Yeah, and there is a chain of custody issue. When you put your ballot in the mail, goes how many people touch it before it gets to where it's going, like with USPS, etc. So there are some issues here. We need that Supreme Court ruling on the late counting of ballots. I think that will help immensely. All right, we'll get to comments from the live stream coming up next. First, if you're thinking about moving, maybe out of state, maybe just across the street, there's definitely a lot of houses going up for sale in my neighborhood, and I have to wonder how many of those are fleeing the state of Washington. Give our friend Wes Jones a call, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. And I think the very first thing you should ask, even if you're just at the early stages of thinking about it, I would ask Wes for a free market analysis because there are a lot of homes on the market right now. And so with that comes a lot more competition. You might need to do more to your home. That was the case for Wes's client, Lon Westover, who is an undivided viewer. And he says that his home needed some extra special staging to stand out.
And they stage it in such a way that it's so inviting, super inviting. You're looking at the pictures going, huh. How come I never think about putting my out like that? You got to do some things that just spice the place up so people look at it and go, wow, this is something.
Yeah, so go from Sell with Wes to Sold with Wes, but it's never too early to get started, especially with all the homes on the market. Get a sense from Wes of how long it might take to sell your home, what you might need to put into it in terms of, you know, cosmetic updates or staging, etc. He's just great. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, comments from the live stream, shall we? Diana Manning says she loved yesterday's Sundays with Subscribers. She said, perhaps we should add Genesis to your candidate charity list when you do a fund drive. Yeah, Genesis project is great. Are you okay over there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Struggle bus today.
Yeah, yeah. Joe Wilson, I'm a manager at Mitt Market. We had to call the police on solicitors selling food. What? The police are not allowed to ask for permits. It's discrimination. There were solicitors where at Mitt Market, like outside selling food? Why do you look so small right now, Nicole? Oh, sit up.
Sorry.
There you go. What, selling food where? In Mitt Market? I'm so confused. Eric, apparently King County commissioners are going to revamp the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. Yeah, we'll have to check in on what's going on with that.
Yeah, they're just going to put in some financial watchers.
It needs to go away.
Yeah.
On the testosterone vials used in the school's Pride Month display, Necro Two Shoes says, well, we're always telling them they're low T soy boys, so here's the fix. True. Yeah, maybe the boys should grab some of that testosterone, or the teachers, the male teachers. I am Sitha Zagoth. Say no to drugs unless it's testosterone. Yeah.
Yeah. True story. Yeah, so we true. Bring back that the DARE campaign.
Yeah. Tara, the crazy far left just keeps pushing and pushing the envelope to see just how far they can go. As long as they can get away with it, they will do it and keep doing it. But even when they don't get away with it, they'll just say, yeah, but you're a bigot for pointing it out. I'm a bigot for not wanting there to be a vials of a controlled substance at a school district.
It's exhausting.
It is so exhausting. It's just... let's see here. On the teacher couple being investigated because the student love triangle weird thing, Matthew Cook says, once again, groomers going into jobs and activities that give them access to kids. Lockman says, I'm amazed how much this stuff is going on. It's absolutely nuts. Greg says, when is Washington going to get its own reality show? Holy S, this is some crazy Seriously. Stuff.
And I mean, you laid out the timeline, but just to reiterate a little bit. So this teacher got called out on it. She resigned. A year later, the student was at their house. He was still living there, like in on and off and kind of staying there and whatever. Like, she didn't separate herself from this person.
And what kind of husband? Clearly, he knew that he had to have known there was this accusation. He's just letting the kid live there. What is going on?
What is going on?
All right. State warning of self-induced budget nightmares. Country guy, any account that can't be audited should get no more funding. I agree. Analog James, the political left has never understood that if you give the government enough power to create social justice, you have given it enough power to create despotism. Yeah, I agree. Haynes, but Bob Ferguson said he would veto an income tax for all. Yeah. No, that letter is setting it up. It's, first of all, fear-mongering, saying, oh, if you repeal the income tax, then this is just unfixable.
We will 100%. Have to do it.
Yeah. And then they'll blame the voters and blame the Republicans, whatever it is. Blame Brian Haywood.
He cannot win again.
Bob?
Yes.
I know, but look, who's going to be able to beat him?
A Democrat. We just have to find one we like.
Besides me, obviously.
Let's bring back Mark.
Handedly. Mark's not going to be able to win. He got like 3% of the vote or something. 9? I don't know.
Yeah.
I think Republicans just have to start running as Democrats. Just trick some people,
yeah.
Honestly. Doug Troyer, Washington has a net negative population growth. Is it net negative? I don't know if it's net negative yet. I'd have to check on that. On the community demanding action on Aurora, Todd Welch, what was the percentage that Katie Wilson got for votes in these precincts?
Good question.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll have to look at that. Steve, this is what a peaceful assembly looks like. Yeah, you got the police escort, you just signs, and yay, you know, save the city. Mm-hmm. They're not burning down buildings.
And not spewing hate.
I know. on the Seattle mayor, finally caving on police cameras, Average Joe says, reactive approach to security is like using a helmet after you crash. JMPNW, those risk factors have been there all along. She's just weak and can't form an opinion of her own, just waves with the pressure. Look, and I'm glad that she relented, but...
She didn't relent. She just said, oh, I heard a credible threat, so that's what I said I would do. I'd turn them on if it's credible,
yeah.
So now I'm turning them on. No. Well,
but then also she said... earlier that she'd turn them back off if there were federal agents spotted. So is she going to do that now? Because there's going to be federal agents freaking everywhere.
I think that this was her plan all along. She just wanted to kind of virtue signal yes. for her people that don't like cameras and then cave because, oh, I'm trying to just keep you safe. And
I don't know. Or she did realize that the accusation that she couldn't legally do it was probably true. And I don't know.
Maybe. But I mean, it was an advertisement for terrorists.
Yes.
Hey,
there'll be no Seattle, cameras.
Nobody's watching.
Yep.
Come 100%. On in.
All right. We'll get to thank you, Nicole. Sheesh. Our closing sanity check next. First. Wow. It's already 1:12. I feel like we've only been here for like a half hour. A whole bunch of you guys have taken the First Mark challenge and are saving money on your insurance. And why wouldn't you do it? It doesn't cost you anything. It doesn't really take a lot of time either. You just get in touch with First Mark, firstmarkinsurance.com. Tell them, I want to take the First Mark challenge because Brandy told me to. And then they'll go out, shop the market of carriers for you, come back with their recommendations. And, you know, they might say, hey, we actually can't save you any money, so I'd stick with your current insurance. But I think that's a First Mark victory as well because it's the sign of an honest company. And then, you know, actually, I got the best price for my insurance and I can't save any money that way. Or like so many Undivided viewers and listeners, you'll be saving hundreds of dollars a month, thousands of dollars a year. Mike and I just saved $2,000 on our latest renewal with First Mark. We didn't lift a finger. They just sent us an email saying, hey, good news. We checked all your insurance again this year and we can save you like $2,000. I'm like, this is amazing. Why doesn't everybody do this? FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, so of course, Scott Pelley's gone from 60 Minutes, and the meltdown in the legacy media continues. Although I did see this clip of Katie Couric, and she was at CBS News around the time Scott Pelley was, and she anchored the evening news before he did. And she was saying basically like, yeah, you can't talk to your bosses like that and expect to keep your job. Mm-hmm. And so she said she agrees with a lot of the criticism that Scott Pelley has had about the direction that CBS is going, but she was like, no, you can't speak to your boss like that. So I was like, good for Katie Couric. But anyway, so Scott Pelley did this interview with the New York Times, and he was in tears at one point in it. I mean, it was just, I don't know what he thought, how he thought he was going to come across, but he was talking about when Barry Weiss took over as the editor-in-chief of CBS News. And Barry Weiss, of course, was the former New York Times columnist. You know, she got vilified and canceled for being too far to the right, even though she's just a moderate. She went on to start the Free Press. And a couple interesting things. Scott Pelley said he didn't know who Barry Weiss was when she took over as editor-in-chief of CBS News. And I'm like, she was like at that time the most consequential media figure in the country. I mean, she built this massive thing, had this huge following, and he didn't know who Barry Weiss is. That's concerning. But then he said that he was angry because one of the very first things that Barry Weiss asked CBS News staffers when she took over the job is, why do you think the country thinks you're biased? And Scott Pelley just could not comprehend that question.
She, I am told, said something to the effect of, why do you think the country thinks you're biased? But she didn't offer any kind of a metric. You know, what's your metric? Why do you think so? Do you have a poll? Is there market research? What are you talking about? Because we certainly didn't believe that.
Yeah, I'm sure you didn't believe that. That's the problem. Literally no self-awareness where you, Scott Pelley, in the news for what, 40 years, didn't understand or needed a poll to show you that Americans didn't have trust in the media? I mean, I don't think you need a poll or anything like that, but let's say he does need a poll. There's polls out on this every single year. Gallup has been polling this issue forever. And for a long period of time, American trust in the media has been on the rapid descent. For instance, this is Gallup in 2025. Trust in media at new low of 28% in the United States. Republicans' confidence in mass media to report news fully, accurately, and fairly is only at 8%. These polls come out every single year. In fact, here's a graphic that Gallup put out in 2024 showing how trust in the media has plummeted since 1972 amongst all parties. It's at like 27% now, I think, in 2026. So does he just not pay attention? Does he not actually care whether Americans trust him or don't trust him? So that, to me, is just proof why Scott Pelley, it was the right decision for Scott Pelley to leave or be fired from 60 Minutes. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Appreciate every single one of you. Slight bit more appreciation for our paid subscribers. If you'd like to become one, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Shop our merch store while you're there, etc., etc., etc. We will see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.